It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Syrian peace talks are on for Friday. The invitations are going out Tuesday to those invited to UN-mediated Syria peace talks in Geneva, which special UN envoy Stefan de Mistura Monday announced would get underway Friday.
We are going to aim at the proximity talks starting on the 29th and ongoing for 6 months on a staggered chronological proximity approach. That will be the way we try to make it different from the past. This is not Geneva 3. This is leading to what we hope will be a Geneva success story if we are able to push it forward.
He said the talks would involve a ceasefire, delivery of humanitarian aid, and an eventual political settlement. He did not disclose who the invitations are going out to. Two previous diplomatic efforts failed. On the battlefield, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said Monday the government recaptured Sheikh Maskin in the southern province of Daraa following a series of recent victories in the north. Multiple suicide bombers attacked a town in far northern Cameroon Monday, killing more than 30, wounding dozens more. The bombers detonated their explosives in the town of Bodo along the Nigeria-Cameroon border. The town is an area frequently targeted by Boko Haram militants. The group has carried out numerous deadly attacks in northern Cameroon since 2013, when the government began a crackdown on militants using the region as a base to launch attacks. Asian markets Tuesday plunged following a two-day rally. U.S. and European markets were lower in trading Monday as the price of oil sank. It also comes ahead of the end of a policy meeting Wednesday by the U.S. Central Bank. This is VOA News. Two Palestinians were shot dead Monday after stabbing two Israeli women at a West Bank market. Mickey Rosenfeld is an Israeli police spokesman.
Early evening, two Palestinians entered inside the Jewish community area in Beit Horon. They were both armed with knives. They stabbed two Israeli women, one in her 20s, who was critically injured and is now fighting for life in a Jerusalem hospital. The second woman, a woman in her 50s, is in hospital in moderate condition.
The last 4 months have seen nearly daily Palestinian attacks that have killed at least 25 Israelis and nearly 150 Palestinians. Egypt Monday marked the fifth anniversary of the uprising that brought down longtime President Hosni Mubarak. There were scattered demonstrations amid tight security. Some took to social media to mark the occasion back in 2011, when tens of thousands gathered at the epicenter of the protests, Cairo's Tahrir Square, in 18 days of demonstrations and violence. The European Union police agency Europol warned Monday that Islamic State and other militants are likely to carry out large-scale attacks across Europe following last year's Paris attacks. Rob Wainwright is the Europol director.
So-called Islamic State has a willingness and a capability to carry out further attacks in Europe. And of course, all of the national authorities across Europe are working to prevent that from happening. We know that there is a capability.
Europol's assessment comes as the agency launches its new European Counterterrorism Center at The Hague. The unit will be staffed by up to 50 counterterrorism experts tasked with intelligence sharing, tracking foreign fighters and sources of illegal financing and firearms, and assisting EU countries in counterterrorism investigations. Tunisian police Monday marched in protest to the presidential palace demanding higher pay. It's the latest in a series of demonstrations regarding the North African country's economy. People seeking jobs were on the streets again Monday, this time in central town of Zidi Bouzid. The unemployed were staging a sit-in at a government building in Kasserine, with similar protests reported in Beja and Gafsa. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Monday called on the warring factions in South Sudan to resolve their differences, keeping them from forming an agreed-to national unity government. Mr. Ban said forming a transitional government is an essential step to implement a peace agreement reached last August between the government and rebels. Rwandan police Monday said they shot and killed a Muslim cleric on Saturday, suspected of recruiting for the Islamic State group, as he attempted to flee custody. A police statement said the deputy imam of a Kigali mosque, identified as Mohammed Muge Mangango, was under investigation for mentoring Rwandan youths into jihad, recruiting them to join the IS group in Syria. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Tuesday, January 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi says it will welcome South Africa's role in the ongoing inter-Burundian dialogue if South Africa offers to facilitate.
I believe that South Africa, being a country which has immensely contributed to the peace process in Burundi in the late 90s and early 2000s, is absolutely a country that can play a critical role in the dialogue process that we have embarked upon.
Alain Yamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. The UN calls for more support for those displaced by Boko Haram insurgency. Libya's parliament in Tobruk calls for a new, smaller unity government. There have been anti-gay protests in Senegal, and Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf delivers her State of the Republic address.
Basically, the president highlighted some of the major achievements she made, not just during the year, but during the course of the last 10 years.
Rodney Sears, publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa Online and print newspaper, and Zimbabwe's main opposition urges President Mugabe to call a special cabinet meeting this week to discuss hunger in the country. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi's government says it will welcome any offer by South Africa to facilitate the ongoing inter-Burundian dialogue. Foreign Minister Alain Yamitwe says although such offer has yet to be made, his government would not refuse it if it is made because South Africa played a critical role in the Burundian peace process in the late 1990s and early 2000s. East Africa Community Mediated Peace Talks, led by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, have so far failed to yield practical results. Foreign Minister Yamitwe says if South Africa offers to facilitate the dialogue, its role would not be incompatible, but rather complementary to what's already been done by President Museveni and the East Africa community.
I don't think it has been confirmed yet, but I believe that South Africa, being a country which has immensely contributed to the peace process in Burundi in the late 90s and early 2000s, is absolutely a country that can play a critical role in the dialogue process that we have embarked upon. So we remain to receive that request, but I believe that that country has played a very critical and positive role in putting peace in Burundi since the year that I've mentioned.
When you say request, the South Africa request or offer to mediate?
I would suppose that the request will have to be formulated and processed through the diplomatic channels, be they bilateral or multilateral, because as we speak, we have not been seized of that request or, if you like, of that offer. But like I said, should they offer, I believe they are well placed to play a good role in the dialogue process.
So you are saying, Mr. Minister, your country would welcome if South Africa requests to mediate. You will welcome that.
Let me first of all say that we're not talking about mediation. We're talking about facilitation. I think the two words are not interchangeable. But also, I have to insist on the fact that as a government, we wouldn't find it a problem if South Africa would offer to support if the regional efforts in the facilitation that they are playing on Burundi.
Ugandan President Museveni had been involved in this through East African community. Let's assume that what we are talking about is true. Would Uganda and the East African community continue to play a role?
Of course, just like they did in the 90s and 2000 years. I mean, they played that role, I'll say, together. South Africa was involved. You recall that it was President Mandela who took over from the late Nyerere. So I do not think that the role of South Africa with the role of the EAC will be in any way incompatible. They could be rather complementary.
Having followed the crisis in your country, Mr. Minister, it seems to me there are some irreconcilable issues. So does it matter who comes in to facilitate, whether it's South Africa, Uganda, the East African community? I mean, how would this make a difference?
Like I said, you seem to ask the question as if it is already a done deal. I was on the position of telling you that should they offer, if you have heard that, should they offer, wouldn't see that as a problem. Now, I don't think that the government of Burundi or any party in Burundi has questioned the facilitation played by President Museveni. We might have issues on some modalities, but we have not questioned the facilitation role played by Uganda. So I'm led to believe also that so then South Africa join us in this pivotal role, it would only bring more human resources and human brains to the task of facilitating this exercise in which we are involved.
Alain Nyamitwe is Burundi's foreign minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf on Monday delivered her State of the Republic speech to the Liberian people. The president has been in power for almost 11 years now. On the line from Monrovia is Rodney Sie, publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa Online and print newspaper. Good morning, Rodney.
Good morning, James.
Welcome again to Daybreak Africa. The president spoke to the nation Monday night. What did she have to say?
Well, James, basically, the president highlighted some of the major achievements she made, not just during the year, but during the course of the last 10 years. But the highlight points of her speech centered around a bill to amend the anti-corruption bill, which is submitted to the legislature to sort of fast-track corruption cases, and also give prosecutorial powers to the LACC to be able to prosecute, not just arrest, but prosecute corrupt officials.
The question is, why now is this doable?
Well, it's going to be complicated because some of the lawmakers who are supposed to be looking at this bill are also subject to investigation by the LACC. For example, the Speaker of the House of Representatives is subject to investigation, and this might be able to test whether the legislature is capable of debating an amendment when their own people are involved in corruption cases.
On the economy, she mentioned how when she took over, she inherited a collapsed economy. But now she said things have picked up. Of course, she mentioned how Ebola and other unforeseeable developments contributed to the lack of growth of the economy. What she's going to be doing, I think she mentioned increasing, putting focus on tax revenues.
Yeah, the focus, James, has been on tax revenue. And the president, in a sense, acknowledged that the economy is under immense stress. And her goal is to use the issue of taxes to, you know, sort of raise money for the country because a lot of concessions have been having problems. So, in a sense, she's looking toward the issue of taxes. But the economy is so strained that the ordinary Liberians cannot, many of them, affecting the business, can afford to pay those taxes, and their taxes are so high, and people are complaining about those taxes.
The president said that Liberia is safe and secure, and she mentioned the decision of the UN Security Council to draw down the United Nations mission in Liberia. You are there in Monrovia there. What do people think about this particular issue? Do they think the country is ready?
Well, depending on who you ask, James, it is very, very complicated. For the simple fact that the security sector needs more than $100 million to put its act together. Raising that money would be a challenge, but more importantly, people are not sure that the security sector is ready to take over the security of UNMIL.
Rodney, thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan.
That was Rodney Sie, publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa Online and print newspaper, speaking with us from Liberia's capital, Monrovia. Today's Tuesday, January 26th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Radio Banga, FM 96.5 in Bong County, Central Liberia, and Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, as well as Brela FM in Nigeria. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Three UN special investigators say Nigeria must do more to help the millions of people displaced by Boko Haram insurgency, particularly women and children. Christine reports with Ubale Musa in Abuja.
Boko Haram's nearly seven-year quest to impose strict Islamic law across Nigeria's northeast has killed more than 20,000 people and displaced more than 2 million others. While some have fled to neighboring Chad, Cameroon, or Niger, many have gone to displaced persons camps elsewhere in Nigeria. The UN special investigators visited three camps in war-torn Borno state. They commended Nigeria's government for setting up institutions and laws to handle the reintegration of women and children displaced by the conflict. But special investigator on the sale of children, child pornography, and child prostitution, Maud Dubour Bukichu, says Nigeria must do more to help people subjected to violence get back on their feet. The insurgency has destroyed homes and livelihoods across Nigeria's northeast. Bukichu called for vocational training for displaced people.
We felt that there were insufficient measures taken to really empower the women and girls to prepare them for a future full integration into society.
In recent months, Nigerian troops have rescued large groups of people taken captive by the militants. Most were women and children. Bukichu says former captives face stigma as they try to rebuild their lives.
They're rejected sometimes by their families, they're rejected by the communities, and we believe that major efforts should go into the clarification of these issues.
Special investigator on contemporary forms of slavery, Ermila Bula, spoke about the more than 200 schoolgirls kidnapped by the insurgents from the northeastern town of Chibok in 2014.
We urge the government to increase efforts to locate these girls, or at the very least to provide feedback to their families and to their communities as to their well-being.
The Chibok girls have been missing for 651 days. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Anti-gay groups recently held an unsanctioned protest in Senegal's capital, Dakar, where they called on the government to do more to criminalize homosexuality. They also called for the removal of Senegal's Minister of Justice, Sidiki Kaba, who had expressed his support for LGBTI rights in the past. Amnesty International West Africa researcher Francois Patol tells Ricky Stryak about the group's demands and the continued challenges facing gay rights in Senegal.
There is state-sponsored homophobia in Senegal. This is manifested both in the legal framework, which criminalizes unnatural acts and which is discriminatory towards LGBTIs, but it's also manifested by the lack of protection that the state fails to provide to people who are attacked on the basis of their sexual orientation. And that gives space for groups in Senegalese society to target people on the basis of their sexual orientation.
On Friday, there was a protest that was not state-sanctioned, as I understand it. They did not have the permits they needed, and it was organized by religious leaders, is that correct?
So it was by religious leaders, but also by other social groups. So it was there were a number of calls that this protest had. One was to outlaw homosexuality as such, because currently, under the current legal framework, it's unnatural act, which is unlawful. So they want to push the law further and have even more homophobic provisions in the law, which would criminalize homosexuality. They also wanted the Minister of Justice to step down because he had messages supporting LGBTIs in the past, or supporting having a more permissive framework for people to be able to, you know, live their sexual orientation and their gender identity.
What does the law say right now exactly, and what did the people at the protest call for?
Under Senegalese law, unnatural acts are criminalized, and unnatural acts are sexual acts between consenting adults of the same sex. So it includes sodomy, for instance, is criminalized in Senegal. So the Senegalese authorities argue that homosexuality as such is not criminal.
They want the wordage to say homosexuality.
Exactly. One of the objectives of the protest on Friday was to call for really wording homosexuality into the law, or criminalizing homosexuality in the law.
This is happening in an even more tense climate. Things really seem to be a little more tense lately than normal as far as homosexuality in the press. The local press is talking about it. One reason appears to be this music video where a Senegalese musician is holding a purse, a woman's purse, and this is all over Senegalese media right now. Can you tell me a little bit about that, and are the two things tied?
Generally, what's happening is that the state is failing to provide protection to people who are under attack because of their sexual orientation or their gender identity. What happens is that you have a certain laissez-faire, which means that people, you know, can target people who are presumed to be lesbians or gay, who appear to be lesbians or gay, just because they are presuming that they are, you know, homosexuals or gays or lesbians. And what is happening is that you have this blurring of the lines between what people assume of the other person's sexual orientation. And because the state doesn't talk about that, because the state fails to provide protection to sexual minorities, you know, it keeps on going.
That was Francois Patuel, a West Africa researcher for Amnesty International. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Libya's internationally recognized parliament in Tobruk voted overwhelmingly on Monday not to approve the new 32-member UN-sponsored national unity government. Instead, it called for a smaller 17-member government. Edward Urania reports from Cairo.
Members of Libya's Tobruk-based parliament, one of two legislative bodies vying for power in the country, applauded after voting against the recently named 32-minister government of UN-appointed Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj. 89 MPs called for Sarraj to appoint a smaller 17-member cabinet instead within the next 10 days. Arab media reported that parliamentarians did approve Sarraj's nomination for prime minister, as well as the governing council stipulated in the UN-backed Skyrat National Unity Accord. Political analyst Muftah Lamloum told Libyan TV he questioned the validity of the Libyan parliament's vote to disapprove the newly appointed government of Fayez Sarraj. He says that he does not believe that members of the Libyan parliament have the authority to approve or disapprove the new government, given that the rival legislative body in Tripoli, the General National Congress, has not been given that right either. He insists the UN-backed National Unity Accord must be accepted as is. Saudi-owned Al Hayat newspaper, quoting highly placed French officials, stated that Italian General Paolo Serra, who is due to oversee the installation of the new Libyan government in Tripoli, has met with Libyan military officials from various parts of the country. The paper said that neither General Serra nor Libyan leaders would like to see foreign troops deployed to install the new government. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In Zimbabwe, the opposition movement for democratic change formation, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, has urged President Robert Mugabe to call a special cabinet meeting this week to tackle the hunger situation that it said is threatening millions of people and livestock. Mr. Mugabe returned home from his month-long vacation on Friday amid criticism that he was wasting the country's meager resources in the face of a crippling economic disaster. MDCT spokesman Ober Gutu says government should address the hunger situation as a matter of urgency to avert loss of life.
We would want him to immediately set up mechanisms and systems that will address the impending severe drought that we are facing as a nation. You know that already rains have been very erratic. We have had a very bad rainy season, the effects of El Nino, and obviously coupled with mismanagement and the poor planning by the ZANU-PF regime has led to a situation where, as I am talking to you right now, Ntungamili, at least 1 million Zimbabweans are in need of urgent food relief, but the government is totally broke. We had in the news last week that they had borrowed $200 million from some foreign bank. But knowing this government, we will only be happy when we start seeing the maize arriving in the country. We can never trust them by their public disclosure that they have accessed the loan. We believe it is just a gimmick. It is just propaganda. What we want to see is Mugabe leading his government, firstly, by declaring a state of emergency, because already we are facing a devastating drought. Cabinet has not sat since December 22nd or 21st last year, and we expect President Mugabe to immediately convene his cabinet and set to work to avert the impending drought. That is what he has to do as a matter of urgency.
How about on the economic front?
We do not see much change for the better happening in 2016. Already we are talking of a country that is in a serious deflation mode. We are talking of a country that is at 90% of its people living on less than US$1 a day.
That was MDCT spokesman Olbert Gutu speaking from Harare with Untungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe service. Minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Angola edged Ethiopia 2-1 in the Amahoro National Stadium at the Orange African Nations Championships in Kigali, Rwanda on Monday. Cameroon outplayed the Democratic Republic of Congo 3-1 in Butare, some 140 kilometers south of the capital, Kigali. Consequently, Cameroon and the Democratic Republic of Congo progress from Group B to the quarterfinals. Today, Tuesday, Niger challenged Tunisia at the Nyamirambo Stadium in Kigali as Guinea face Nigeria at the Umganda Stadium in Gishenyi, some 160 kilometers northwest of Kigali, in the final Group C matches. Nigeria lead the group with 4 points. Guinea and Tunisia are tied with 2 points each, while Niger has 1 point. Meanwhile, Nigeria outclassed their Namibian hosts 7-1 in the Africa qualifiers for the FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup in Windhoek on Sunday. Nigeria progressed to the second round on an 11-1 aggregate. Cameroon dismissed Ethiopia 4-1 in Addis Ababa to advance courtesy of a 6-2 advantage, while Egypt edged their hosts Djibouti 2-1 in Djibouti City on Saturday. Egypt advanced on an 8-1 aggregate. Cameroon, Egypt, and Nigeria joined Ghana, Morocco, and South Africa in the second round of the qualifiers in March. In handball, hosts Egypt dismissed Gabon 31-16. Morocco beat Nigeria 25-20 as Algeria outplayed Cameroon 34-27 at the Africa Men's Handball Championships in Cairo on Monday. Angola edged the Democratic Republic of Congo 28-24. Tunisia outclassed the Republic of Congo 44-20 and Libya beat Kenya 30-22. Today, Tuesday, Algeria encounter Nigeria. Cameroon meet Gabon as Egypt engage Morocco. The Democratic Republic of Congo play Kenya. Tunisia engage Angola and the Republic of Congo face Libya. Finally, in athletics, Kenyan Irene Cheptai prevailed in the women's race at the IAAF cross-country permit meet in Elgobar, Spain on Sunday. She was followed across the finish line by Ethiopians Netsanet Gudeta and Alemito Heroya, then Ugandan Juliet Chepkwel, while Ethiopia's Tamirat Tola was runner-up in the men's contest. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Libya's internationally recognized parliament on Monday rejected the UN Assembled Unity Government with rival Islamists. 89 of the 104 lawmakers who took part in Monday's parliamentary session in Tobruk voted to reject the UN peace plan, demanding a new proposal within 10 days. At least one member of parliament said the cabinet is too large and that the lawmakers would consider a smaller body. The streets of Egypt's cities were somber on Monday, the five-year anniversary of the January 25th day of rage against poverty, joblessness, political corruption, and most notably, the three-decade regime of President Hosni Mubarak. Within weeks, the millions who occupied Tahrir Square and streets across the nation toppled Mubarak and began what they hoped was a path to change. That's it for this Tuesday, January 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Peter Hundley, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte here to remind you that February is Black History Month in the United States. And starting Monday, February 1st, we will begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. please send your answers to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, select the number 25 to leave us your answer. Get up, stand up.